Hi, welcome to the Meg Pearson Podcast, Fertile at 40. I'm your host, Meg Pearson. After many health complications due to alcohol addiction and an eating disorder that ruled my world for close to 20 years, I was told I would never have children. At 38, I naturally and surprisingly fell pregnant, and the transition from maiden to mother was wrought with love, grief, excitement, and healing. Becoming a mama was about far more than just soothing stitches and learning how to care for a tiny human. It was, and still is, a relearning of who I am and what I am truly capable of. After over two challenging years trying to conceive a second baby since, I gratefully and naturally conceived my second child just as I turned 41, after three losses and heaps of heartache. I am a doula in training, holistic chef, teacher of yoga, and a childbirth educator, and I am here to share my story because I know it's not just mine. Join me each week for unbiased convos with a no-bullshit approach to faith, infertility, conscious conception, and connected pregnancy, with birth stories, expert interviews, and personal anecdotes to help tell the story of creation. Welcome. Now let's do this. Hi guys, welcome to this week's episode of Fertile at 40 Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Pearson. As always, thrilled to have you here. Today, I have a guest by the name of Sabrina Verdi. She's a registered holistic nutritionist specializing in pre and postnatal care and family health. Today, Sabrina and I are going to dive deep into what we can do from trimester zero, which is preconception, through to conception when it comes to diet, but with a no good versus bad mentality. And this is what I really love about Sabrina. Sabrina is going to walk us through the six foods that should be part of any fertility meal plan. Even though I hate the word should, these are really great fertility power foods, as well as a handful that could be limited or avoided for optimal health. We talk about the best good fats and how elimination diets can sometimes support those battling inflammation or autoimmune issues, but the best way to do it. And we also speak to my experience with how these stricter ways of eating did not serve me on my path to fertility. So, can't wait to get into this conversation. I'm going to be having Sabrina on the show again later this year, where we're going to talk about postnatal nutrition as well as breastfeeding and just supporting lactation through diet. So that's going to be a really exciting episode. Stay tuned for that. And if you're not following me on Instagram yet, where have you been? Please do, at Coach Meg Pearson, and also the podcast at Fertile at 40 Podcast. Love you. Here is my conversation with Sabrina. One last thing before we get into the conversation. I want to remind you that this podcast provides general information and discussion about natural medicine, health, pregnancy, and childbirth related subjects. The content here should not be taken as medical advice, and the content here is for informational purposes only. And because each person is so unique, please consult with your healthcare professional for any medical questions. Now, on with the show. Hello, Sabrina. Welcome to Fertile at 40 Podcast.
Hey, how's it going? I'm so excited to be here and nervous.
I love it. Me too. Every time.
I've got like little sweat building up over here.
I do too, but for different reasons. I'm 30 weeks pregnant, living in Costa Rica. Well, I love that you said you're nervous. We were just chit-chatting offline before I hit record, and you know, before we get into the conversation today, you've spent a lot of time here in Costa Rica. So that's, I love that we have that connection.
And probably too bad I didn't see you when I was there.
I know. And yeah, and you were here. And I think like weeks later, I was up in Canada when you were back in Canada.
You were.
We never had a chance to connect, but maybe next time. So
we'll have to make it happen in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. In Canada in the summer, that would be nice. So before we get into talking fertility, preconception, and prenatal nutrition, which is what you're here to discuss with our listeners here today, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you are right now and who it is that you're helping in the world? What are you doing? What do you do?
Okay, so I am currently in gray Toronto, not as sunny as where you are right now. And I'm a holistic nutritionist and strength coach within Toronto. So a lot of the work that I'm doing is predominantly with women who are in the process of trying to conceive or who have just gotten married and are looking to sort of nourish themselves a little bit differently and look at ways to fuel their bodies to get themselves ready to conceive. I work a lot with families, so mothers and fathers who have children who are looking to sort of change their dietary needs or the way that they consume food to nourish their bodies a little bit more. And then I also work with women post-pregnancy, working on developing strength in the strength training aspect of things, as well as nourishing their bodies properly and just really getting them back to feeling their best selves.
Right. And I think that, I mean, and this is a whole other episode is talking about the postnatal needs of mother. Because a lot of people don't even realize still how depleted our bodies become as we are building a human. And now, like I said, I'm 30 weeks pregnant and I've been really feeling it. It's my second pregnancy and that is, it's key. I've been really trying to be mindful of making sure that I'm taking care of myself from a nutritional standpoint. Now, a lot of the people that are going to be listening and a lot of people that I work with in my coaching practice want to know and are always asking, how do I eat when I'm trying to conceive? And I believe, you know, that there's no right way for anyone, right? It's highly individual depending on so many varying factors. But can we talk a little bit about trimester zero, right? Which is this phase of pre-conception that, and how people can best prepare themselves nutritionally for the idea of even trying to conceive, right? Because I think if we're not actively trying to conceive, you know, there's the period before that where we can be optimal and be fueling ourselves optimally. Do you have people that come to you that are like, I don't want to get pregnant right now, but I know I probably do in the next 6 months or in the next year. And how do you work with those people?
So I see a lot of people within that category, and I really like the way that you put it in terms of optimizing their health. So a lot of the work that I'm doing within my practice nowadays is optimizing people's health. Given, you know, our current situation in the world, everybody just wants to find a better way to do things and how they're able to nourish themselves to make themselves feel better. So if we're speaking specifically about women who are looking to do that because they want to conceive at a later date, whether that be in the near future or not. I should also preface and say that you were right to say that there is no one fix for all. So it's not as if I can say, you know, go out and eat this and everybody's who's going to eat this is going to have the greatest, most magical rainbows and roses pregnancy and everything's going to be fantastic. It really is on an individual basis, but there are definitely foods that we can consume to optimize, our energy levels, our ability to have a regular hormonal cycle and just things like that. There are things. I would like to start with foods that would be good to remove, if we can start there, if that's okay. So,
yeah. And that was like, and the next direction, I don't know if this is going to be the direction you're heading in, but that was my next question was going to be, I think also at the same time, a lot of people don't realize how some foods they're eating could be contributing to their inability to conceive through autoimmune dysfunctions or allergies, your body thinking that it's constantly in.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So
fight or flight.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with foods, you know, because then we can end on a high note with all the things that you should be eating and can be eating and all the fun you can have with food. So I don't believe that there are good foods and bad foods, right? There are more nourishing foods and foods that, you know, don't necessarily nourish us, but they make us feel good for the time being. Okay. And I think that so long as we're able to make that distinguishment and we're not labeling good and bad, that's the first step.
Amen.
So with food, yeah. And I think it's really important because then there's a tailspin that happens, right? When we label foods good and bad. So, you know, I will always start with foods that are triggering an autoimmune response or a gut dysfunction or causing an insensitivity or an intolerance that can perpetuate many other ailments in the body, right? So if we look at sugar and the way that our bodies react to sugar, right, depending on the varying levels of, you know, your age and where you're at, sugar is something that we can do without, right? And there are ways to replace it. And so when I say sugar, I'm talking about refined sugars, white sugars, limiting those foods with refined sugar in it is really, really important to keep inflammation low in our bodies, right? To really help optimize our digestion, to optimize our energy, to optimize our brain function. All of these things are really important when we're looking at conceiving, right? Yes. So removing refined sugars and making that switch for coconut sugar or maple syrup or things like that. And again, limiting those as well, but you know, we want to enjoy the food that we're eating. So I'm not at all suggesting that we eat bland food. Alcohol. And, you know, I don't know that a lot of women nowadays are consuming a lot of alcohol when they're trying to conceive, but alcohol, again, is a really inflammatory substance that we put into our bodies. And if we are concerned about optimizing our health to then house another human being, alcohol has the effects that it, you know, it really does limit our ability to detox our kidneys and our liver. There's a lot of things that do go hand in hand with alcohol consumption. So limiting the alcohol is a really good thing as well.
And not to mention the alcohol is I know most women that I know are drinking wine, which is sugar.
So full of sugar, so much sugar. I'll always say, you know, I'll just give a little piece of information. When I have weight loss clients and women, you know, who are postnatal and looking to lose some weight, you know, and they're enjoying a cocktail here and there and some wine. And I'll always tell them that our bodies, the one thing that happens when we consume alcohol is right away, our bodies go to try and detox. Go to try to break down that alcohol. So your body's spending more time breaking down alcohol than it is breaking down the rest of the food that's stored and calories that are stored in your body, as well as it's not focusing on healing your body, mm-hmm. because all it's doing is trying to remove the alcohol.
Yeah.
Right. So yes. So there's that. Some other foods that I think are really important to look at are dairy and foods that are kind of in the family of dairy. And, you know, it's a lot of women will say, well, you know, I thought I should be eating dairy because I'm going to now house a baby and I need to ensure that I'm getting enough calcium and my baby gets enough fat and all of these things. But dairy is very inflammatory as well. So within my practice and in my opinion, one of the things that I think is also really nice to limit is dairy and things that cause mucus in our bodies that really don't add much nourishment. They just add a lot of mucus and add a lot of buildup. And the inflammatory response when we have achy joints and we have issues with mobility when we are pregnant, a lot of the times is associated to dairy consumption.
Right. And when you're pregnant, especially, you got a lot of other mucus and stuff going on in your body anyway, right? So, I mean, just talking about fluids, I mean, maybe fluids is a more comfortable word for some people than you know, the mucus buildup. But I'm sure that, you know, for people that do have a certain level of intolerance or trouble digesting dairy, especially, it's only going to aggravate the things like the swelling and all of that. Excess
100%.
Yeah.
But you know, also it's not only if you have an intolerance or a sensitivity, because our bodies have a really hard time of breaking it down. Dairy just generally is a mucus forming substance, right? So yes, if there is an intolerance and a sensitivity, it's then tenfold. So to alleviate some of that congestion and water retention and bloating and achiness and all of that stuff that is going to occur inevitably at some point in the pregnancy, limiting the amount of dairy that's consumed prior to can be really beneficial.
And what are your thoughts on dairy, which is essentially, I mean, when we're referring to dairy, it's most often cow's milk products, right? What are your thoughts on sheep's and goat's milk? Because there is, you know, mixed ideas about how the differences, if there really is, if we should eliminate all of it. I mean, I find maybe it's just psychological because I'm a cheese lover, but I find like if I stick to goats and sheep's, I do feel better. I don't have the same level of symptoms, but is that placebo? I don't know.
I love that question. I really do love that question because there is a difference. I do believe that there is a difference. Our bodies break it down differently. Just because of the processing in which, you know, the dairy, what it's coming from, what animal it is coming from. So there is definitely a difference. However, if there is somebody who does have a great sensitivity to dairy, it may not make much of a difference, but it's hard to say. You know, a lot of us are consuming dairy, or foods in general that we don't even realize we have a sensitivity to or an intolerance to because we are consuming them so regularly. So our bodies don't have a chance. We've actually masked what our bodies are trying to tell us.
Right.
Right. So there was a point where our bodies did respond and we felt a certain way about the food, or let's say dairy, for instance. And then because we kept consuming it, the body was like, okay, well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have a question. I mean, let's expand on this a little bit because I know myself included, I spent 2 years trying to conceive my son who I'm currently pregnant with. And I tried.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. So excited. I love it. I'm sitting here and I have my Zoom up on my laptop to record this. I see a picture of me when I was a little girl. And then right above that is my ultrasound picture of my son, who reminds me why I do what I do and why it's so important for me to be sharing all of this information. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
But my partner and I decided early on when we began having, you know, signs that maybe it wasn't going to happen as quickly as we wanted it to. We decided, okay, we're not going to take it to any next medical intervention steps. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. So we really did try anything and everything natural, including following some pretty, and when I say follow, I mean very lightly. I didn't really stick to any of these diets, but I did like things like elimination diets to really hone in on what foods my body reacted to. Now, to be fair, I didn't follow them because of my history. I had bulimia for 20 years. I have very strong opinions on diets and following any sort of protocol restriction, but I did do my best to eliminate certain food groups, and then slowly bring back things, which I know have been proven to help women in their conception, preconception, preparation. If their body has been in constant inflammatory state, trying, you know, and your body thinks that everything is an invader from gluten to dairy to sperm and an egg trying to implant, right? Is that something that you would recommend under guided supervision, obviously, in order to figure out if some things like dairy are causing a problem for women?
100%. And this is why I wanted to start with foods to start avoiding, because as we start removing things out of our diet that are not nourishing us and rather they are causing complications in various different ways, right? Whether that be fertility or just achy joints or acne or weight gain or whatever that looks like for somebody. If you don't tackle that, it doesn't matter what else you do. You're just there. The issue hasn't been resolved. So it's, you know, I wanted to give an example, but I don't know if it'll make much sense. You know, it's like you can continue to eat the dairy and have the congestion and then eat as many oranges as you can on a regular basis to help with antioxidants and vitamin C to help with the immune system. But if the congestion is still there from the dairy that you're consuming, then really the vitamin C and the antioxidants that you're consuming aren't really doing much.
Right.
Right. So yes, I would recommend definitely not necessarily an elimination diet, but really just going back to the basics. really cleaning things up and removing things that potentially are a trigger that we know of. There are, you know, many different triggers that we know of, removing them. And if, you know, when you put them back in, there is nothing that happens, then you know that you can continue to eat these things safely and without issue, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, one of the diets that I tried to look at later on, and when I was getting a little bit more desperate, it was crazy. Like, I was eliminating everything from grains to legumes to egg whites to chocolate and coffee. And I was like, hell no,
But you need the coffee, the chocolate.
I know.
And like the grains. Like, you need all of them.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, but for some people it's proven to work. For other people it doesn't. So it goes back to the very first thing we said, that it's never one size fits all. Mm. Okay. So I think that's really so important for us to get out there, because we can all buy the books and follow the protocols, but that's not going to guarantee us anything. And my big thing is, I didn't want to be suffering more because I was having to follow a strict diet and food is so important to me. I didn't want to feel angry and sad every day because of the limited amount of food I got to eat, while I was also suffering in my heart and grieving miscarriages and the longing of getting pregnant and not being able to do that. Like, the stress was just far too much, you know? Mm. So this is, I think, that's why I think it's so important that if people are looking to conceive and to explore food allergies and stuff like that, to get with a nutritionist like you and
100%. Yeah.
You know, because then they can better understand their symptoms through conversations with you. They can, you know, maybe even take a step further and work with a naturopathic doctor and do like some food sensitivity tests, so they actually have a guideposts, right? Instead of eliminating everything, which is so stressful, they can eliminate the ones that are definitely going to be triggers for them. So let's bring it back to what we were talking about. We've eliminated sugar, alcohol, dairy, any other foods that you think are great to
eliminate? Yeah. I would also, you know, talk about gluten and wheat. And again, I save that one for last because that's a tricky one as well, right? I don't at all ever believe that we should be removing gluten and then only consuming gluten-free products, because those two have a lot of fillers and not at all nourishing, right? And why I say gluten as well is because it's quite inflammatory. And digestively, our bodies, food's not made the way that it used to be made. So our bodies do have a hard time of breaking down the food that consumes gluten in it, whether or not you do have a gluten sensitivity, right? And so it's just really looking at, are we eating well-sourced wheat and grain products, right? Where are they coming from? So, you know, it's not so much removing them out of our diet. It's really more so being aware and conscious of where these things are coming from and how often we are consuming them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do, if I'm having gluten, you know, I do try to opt for sourdoughs and at least getting some fermented goods with the gluten, you know?
Yeah. And then consuming them with fat is also, or a protein, to really help slow down our body's insulin response. Because the moment that we consume grains and wheat products, our bodies go in, our sugar levels spike. So you want to slow down that spike, so that sugar high, is that what they call it? When the crash, you want to slow that down by consuming some nut butters or some coconut oil or whatever that looks like, right? Avocados or protein.
Right.
So just to keep the energy even.
Yeah. And I mean, insulin resistance, prediabetes, diabetes, all of that stuff are definitely going to be something that's going to challenge people when they're trying to conceive, right? I mean, insulin resistance goes hand in hand with things like PCOS, does it not? And if the body is...
And a lot of us are suffering from that without even knowing.
Yeah. Like, there's pre-diabetes. I believe that there's pre-PCOS and all of that stuff as
100%.
Well, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we know that these things are important to look at in our diet, to limit, to crowd out on our plate, if you will. Mm-hmm. What about the foods that we should be eating more of? Now, I know that, you know, obviously we want to choose when it comes to grains, it's got to be whole grains over white and simple carbs, right? Speaking of, since 100%. We're on the grains anyways.
Yes. So in terms of grains and things like that, I have this conversation quite regularly with somebody who has opted for brown bread over white bread. So let's just call it Wonder Bread, for instance, right? They've opted for the brown Wonder Bread rather than the white Wonder Bread. And I always will say, well, just then continue to eat the white bread. You can just eat the Wonder Bread, like the white one, because there really isn't much of a difference between those two, right? The way your body responds and breaks it down, there really isn't much of a difference. So why put yourself through, you know, the hassle of trying to consume, not necessarily enjoying the brown bread, just eat the white bread. But then there's on the other side of that, that, you know, the white bread's not great for you, right? And so really looking at breads that are sprouted grains or that have, that are sour, like that are, you know, that are sourdoughs or spelt, things like that, that are heartier grains rather than just brown wheat or white wheat flour. So there's that. When it comes to sweet potatoes and white potatoes, I think they're one and the same as well. You know, a sweet potato will go a little bit longer than the white potato. And so really, you know, making a mix of both is a nice way to switch that up. And then when it comes to white rice and brown rice, there we go. I think that as well, you know, it's nice to have a mix of both, right? It's not that you need to only stick with brown rice, white rice, you know, brown rice definitely is broke when we're talking about the way our bodies break it down. Our bodies break it down a little bit slower. So it is a little bit better for our energy levels and things like that. But digestive wise, you know, you just mix them up. I don't think it's necessary to stick to one or the other.
Oh, and I love that. I mean, it's so nice to hear from, you know, someone that's not so black and white or brown and white about all of this stuff, you know,
yeah.
Because sometimes
I think it's important.
Yeah. I mean, and we're talking a lot about preconception still, but I mean, all of this can be said also for pregnant people as well, right? Like we really want to, you're doing exactly. What's best for your body. So you're doing the best, what's best for your baby. And God, sometimes as a pregnant woman, I want to have like white rice sushi and vegan sushi. I don't eat fish and no, I'm not recommending you have raw fish sushi, but that's a whole other conversation. Maybe we'll get into all of that in a moment. But yeah, I think it's so like, I love that you're not so hard and fast about these rules because it makes it a lot more approachable. So
you did say something in regards to, I'm going to paraphrase, nourishing our body is really important because then it nourishes our mind. And if our mind is not where it needs to be, then everything else suffers, right? So food should be enjoyable. There shouldn't be, oh God, I got to eat this now type deal. We should enjoy our food, right? And I do believe everything in moderation.
Yeah. I mean, I remember one of the big things, and we're going to get back to the list of more to incorporate.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yes. I remember one of those foods that with one of the nutritionists I was working with back at the end of 2020, she was like, eat liver. I'm like, I'm not eating liver. Like, yeah. First of all, I was vegetarian and vegan for a long time and I can't. But I mean, what I ended up doing was taking grass-fed beef liver capsules. And that was my way of incorporating liver into my diet. But there's just some foods that we're not going to eat. And as a holistic chef and culinary instructor, it's what I did for the last, you know, almost a decade. There was food, certain foods where I'm like, I don't care how healthy it is. I'm not going to tell you to eat it, except for spirulina. That was the one thing that I convinced everyone to eat all the time, which doesn't taste good, but
that's really a good one,
right?
No, it doesn't taste good, but it's a really good one. But it's a really, really good one.
If it tastes like shit or it doesn't, you don't like it, don't eat it. Just don't eat it. Find something else.
No.
Right.
This is what I'm saying. There's not much of a difference between the white rice and the brown rice. So eat which one you like, mm-hmm. just as there's not much difference between the brown Wonder Bread and the white Wonder Bread. Yeah. And I use Wonder Bread just because it's, you know, we're not plugging them, but you know
everybody,
what I mean?
Everybody knows what they are. But then when it comes to choosing the difference, you know, having brown rice over, or choosing quinoa versus brown rice or kamut, or, you know, some of these other
different grains,
then there is more of a difference.
There is definitely. So with the quinoa, you're getting more protein within that. Right. Mm. And all of these different grains, I think it should be very versatile, right? So even if you're not a huge fan of those, mixing them within salads or mixing them in different white or brown rices that you do like, right? I think getting that versatility, because the vitamins and minerals and the nourishment that you're getting from all of these different grains, there's a great array that we're missing when we're only sticking to that one type.
Yeah.
Right. So we're missing a lot of the things. And these are easy things. Even oats. Oats are a great one.
Right. Well, and these are great.
And oats can be. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Sorry.
oats are a great one as well. And they're easy. They're also very versatile in the kitchen. They can be made at dinner time for breakfast. You can use oat flour and make pancakes. You can throw them in your smoothies. Like, those are a really great grain to add in.
And those are one that carry you through preconception, pregnancy, and all the way to support you through
all the way through
breastfeeding, right?
All the way through, especially when we're looking at lactation.
Yeah.
Right. They're very hardy. They go along a very long way. A really good one. Yeah. Very, very good one.
So let's add oats to the list. We'll have a list of like five superfoods.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Or six. Sorry, six.
you're doing my job for me. There you go.
There's something
else.
So let's
my watch is talking to me.
So let's keep going down the list then. Foods to incorporate. We've got whole grains and oats, and let's talk about some other stuff. So if people are looking to build optimal health preconception or in the trying to conceive phase, what are some other types of foods that they should be eating more of?
So protein is a big one, and that's whether, you know, that is plant-based or animal-based protein. But protein is one that we are not consuming enough of. I find that a lot of us are, you know, we're very conscious about the things that we're eating, and we're very, you know, conscious about the amount of fat that we're eating or amount of carbs that we're eating. We don't want to eat too much of those things, but we don't pay attention to whether or not we are eating enough protein. And protein it's the building blocks of our bodies. Like, we need those amino acids in our bodies to sustain everyday life. That's not even talking about pregnancy, right? Or housing a baby. It's really just every day we need more protein. And optimizing our fertility, protein goes hand in hand with that as well, right? And so plant-based options are fine as well as animal-based, whatever that choice is for somebody. And, you know, not all protein is made equally, and we could go down the list of all, you know, what that looks like, but just I do want to leave that overarching statement that it is really important that we are consuming enough protein in our diets.
Yeah. And I think lately there's been so many, you know, reports and people out there saying like, stop worrying so much about protein. Everyone gets enough. And it's like, I'm not really sure if that's quite true, especially in the advent of, you know, plant-based eating, which has been an amazing thing for our environment and for a lot of people's health. But most people that are going plant-based, they don't know where to get. They're not learning. They're not studying. And if they are substituting all of their animal proteins with plant-based, it's packaged, frozen, you know, not great processed stuff anyways. But I do think that it's still a message, like, good quality, high quality protein is
very, very important.
Few people are getting more than they need. I think fewer people than we're led to believe are getting more than they need, especially 100%. In the plant-based world.
100%. And that's why I kind of just said, I could speak about this particular topic for hours. And I do think that, especially if you are plant-based, it's really important to speak with a professional, with a nutritionist, with a naturopath, more so a nutritionist, but really to really help guide you through that process so that you are getting enough. Yeah. And then animal-based eaters, you know, I think, again, not all protein is made equally, as it is for plant-based, right? It's not all made equally. So really speaking with somebody about that to help guide you through that, I believe to be a really important part of the puzzle.
Yeah, especially if you're talking, we're looking at, you know, these 90 days pre-conception where you're trying to optimize mm-hmm. your egg health, right? You want to know and do everything that you can to support that. And instead of guessing, reach out to someone that can really help guide you on mm-hmm. on what to be looking at when it comes to how many grams of protein you should be having in any given day, you know, so important. So what's another type of food that we should be, another fertility power food, if you will, that we should be incorporating more of?
Fat. Mm. Fat.
My Lots favorite. Fat. My favorite.
Yeah. This is something I think that we shy away from, because fat is labeled like a bat. It's, you know, I don't even know the appropriate language here, but fat we are led to believe is a bad thing. It's a bad food. Don't eat fat. And again, there's no right. There's no good or bad, but fat is certainly not bad. So fat can be very nourishing for our bodies. Again, consumed in moderation, right? I'm not suggesting you eat a tub of peanut butter, but
And not everyone should be going keto.
No, not at all. No. Thank you for that disclaimer. That's a big one I see in my practice. You know, I went keto and it's like, no, don't do that. Not everybody should be doing that. No. Actually, fat is a very hard thing for most of us to break down, right? Our bodies, it's a harder thing for us to metabolize. That's the word I should use, metabolize rather than break down. And so a little goes a long way. And so, you know, healthy fat is a good thing. By no means should you be eating several avocados a day and, you know, not 3, 4, 5 tablespoons in your smoothie every day. But, you know, a good amount of healthy fat every day can go a very, very long way. It sustains our energy. It sustains, you know, our body composition. It helps with our brain development. It helps with just keeping us alert and happy and alive, right? So especially when we are looking to, you know, preconception, getting enough fat in our diet is really, really important.
And let's
our body wants. Go ahead.
No, and I was just going to say, and let's talk types of fat, because right, as all proteins are not created equal, all fats mm-hmm. are not created equal as well. We can talk
not at all
umbrella terms like monounsaturated versus, you know, all of that. And a lot of people still don't even know what a monounsaturated fat is. So let's talk about that for a second.
So, well, I think that when we're looking at fat, the way that I've sort of broken it down, I don't even go to the monounsaturated fats anymore. I just sort of say, you know, just stick to natural nut butters, stick to coconut oils, stick to avocado oils, olive oil, coconut. Did I say coconut?
Yeah. My favorite
coconut oil, right? Or coconut manna. So like the coconut butter and things like that. Stick to those. Avocados are a great source of fat. And the rest, leave the rest. Don't touch the rest. Right. You know, we don't need to really be eating fried foods and anything like that. So when we're talking about fat, we're not talking about that kind of fat. We're talking about, you know, I think those were 5. Did I list off 5? I think they were.
Natural nut butters, coconut oil, coconut manna, avocado oil, avocados. What about ghee? How do you feel about ghee?
Oh, ghee. Yes. Okay. Yes. Great one. That's such a good one.
And even grass-fed butter for some people, right?
Yes, 100%. Grass-fed butter is a really great one. It's so tasty on a nice warm muffin. I don't think you can get that flavor from anything else. Ghee is a really, really nice one. It actually adds a really nice, rich flavor to your food.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Right? It's funny. I just made my daughter gluten-free protein-based Rice Krispie squares. So those were the Rice Krispies. Mm-hmm. They were like made of bean and they were chocolate flavor and they were gluten-free. and I used marshmallows. I didn't have any butter and I used ghee. Oh my goodness. So good.
So good. So good.
And she loves them.
Yeah, so good. And you don't even need a lot of it.
Yeah.
Right. Like on the weekends, I'll make eggs with ghee for the kids, right? Instead of coconut oil. And it's just a nice, and they eat eggs with coconut oil on a regular basis, but it just switch, it elevates things, right? It makes everything just taste a little bit more rich, a lot more nourishing, and you don't need a lot of it. So yeah, I think those are the fats that I think that we need to stick with. So it's not, okay, well, the nutritionist said I should eat more fat, so I should eat these French fries that were fried in vegetable oil.
Right.
Not, that's not what I'm saying at all. We're talking about, you know, healthy, nourishing fat. And when we're, I want to be really clear about the nut butter, natural nut butters. It's not Kraft.
Yeah, I was going to say not Jiffy.
Not Jiffy. Yeah.
Where the second ingredient is powdered sugar.
Right. And it's quite easy to make our own these days, right? We don't need, you know, it is quite expensive. Nut butters are not cheap, but it's so easy to make our own.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I do all the time. And I get asked, it's so funny how many people ask me, how do I, oh, you made your own cashew butter. How'd you do it? I'm like, I put cashews in my blender.
Like, and I turn the blender on.
It's like the easiest thing. Sometimes I add a bit of coconut oil and make it even more, you know, rich and delicious. I mean, and if for people to start, like if they want to incorporate more of these fats and maybe they don't cook or whatever, adding a bit of ghee or coconut oil to your morning cup of coffee or your cup of tea, like just starting with that, right? Because if you're not spending a lot of time in the kitchen, it's, you know, not necessarily about replacing the other fats that you use, but adding in this good stuff, because it's not, you want to incorporate it because it's so important, right?
Yeah. Such a great point. Yeah.
If you're having that piece of, you decide you want to have that white piece of Wonder Bread, maybe slather some ghee or coconut oil
ghee on it.
You know,
that's a great idea.
Make it worth
or avocado
while. Or avocado. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And hemp seeds and chia are also a really great source of fat as well.
Yeah, good, good. And also so many other great nutritions. Yeah. Sorry, I'm writing down notes as I'm saying things. And it's great nutrition.
Okay. So we've got the grains, we've got the protein, we've got the fat.
Uh-huh.
Vitamin C and antioxidants, I think, are really important preconception or optimization of nutrition type food.
And why is that? Why do you lean towards those, that vitamin C in particular?
Vitamin C for our immune health, to really just keep our immune system firing on all cylinders. I really think that, you know, conception can be a very challenging, stressful time, regardless of how easy that process is for somebody, because our bodies are going through a lot of change, right? Hormonally. And, you know, we start worrying about different things. We start thinking about different things. And I think that if we are able to support our immune system to keep us firing on all cylinders, then why not?
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, and a couple of oranges or not a couple, that's a silly thing to say. An orange a day is a nice thing, right? Or, you know, adding orange, freshly squeezed orange to things that we're consuming, even berries and things like that, getting some antioxidants to really help boost our immune system in that way, adding berries to our salads or our smoothies. You could probably add them to everything, but those are the two that are coming to my mind right now. But really just supporting our immune system we need to be feeling well, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And our immune system is so deeply linked to our body's ability to regulate in things like inflammation, right? Which is definitely something that we want to be fighting to have control of in the conception process. Right.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the last one on the list.
Greens. Lots of greens. Lots of veggies. Lots of greens. And so I always like to say, I will always prescribe or recommend an amount of green vegetables, because I think we're also not getting enough green vegetables. Once your plate is full with green vegetables, throw the other ones in. That's not an issue. Do whatever else you want. Throw those tomatoes and the cucumbers and all the other things in. But I think it's really important to get those green vegetables, right? You've got there's so many new nutrients. You've got calcium. So forget the milk, eat the broccoli, right? And so leafy greens are easy to saute and throw in anything that you're making and that you're eating, smoothies. Again, that's a really quick one in our house. It's just sort of take this city and it's got all these things in it. Right. And then the cruciferous vegetables. So the green, and the dark leafy greens. So Swiss chard and kale and
bok choy and things like that.
Bok choy. Yes. There you go. I was like, there's more. I know there's more. But those getting those green leafy greens and hearty green vegetables in first and foremost, and then add those other fillers in if you'd like, mushrooms and tomatoes and all the other good ones.
Yeah. And a lot of people will say like, oh God, I have so much I have a hard time digesting raw broccoli, raw lettuce and stuff like that. But you already mentioned it, sauteing it, steaming, you know, cooking that stuff.
Roasting it.
Yes.
Roasting it. Yeah. And now in barbecue, it's, you know, Toronto barbecue season. Here we go. Throw them on the grill, throw them in a pan, put them on the grill. You don't have to think about it again.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and for me, my daughter is so funny. She won't eat any vegetables. I don't know whose child she is because I've been like pushing plant-based food for over a decade now. But she will eat broccoli. She'll eat a piece of broccoli. Like yesterday, I picked her up from school and I look in the rearview mirror. She's got her lunch pail out. She's eating her leftover broccoli spears.
Broccoli.
And I've said to my partner so many times, I'm like, okay, I don't care if she won't eat anything else. She eats broccoli and blueberries. And I'm okay with that.
She's golden. She's golden. Yep. There you go.
Oh my God. So good. Oh my goodness. So we have run out of time, Sabrina. I wanted to cover so much more. I wanted to get into about, you know, pregnancy and what foods do we really need to keep off our menu while pregnant and all of those misconceptions and truths and all that. But we'll have to do that another time because
I'm excited to do that. I don't know how the time's just flown.
I know.
But I can't wait to do it again. Another excuse to see you.
So fun. So much amazing information. I love your approach. I think that it's going to resonate with a lot of the listeners of the show who are on this path and are, you know, soul searching, really trying to connect to themselves and their intuition and really doing what's right for them versus what the world says is the right way to do any of this when it comes to creating life. So thank you so much, Sabrina. Where can people find you if they want to connect, if they want to maybe work with you, see what you've got going on? Where can they find you?
Okay. So on Instagram, I'm at Sabrina Verdi. So S-A-B-R-I-N-A, V for Victor, I-R-D-E-E. So that's on Instagram. And you can find me online at thewellnesschapter.com.
Amazing. And we'll put links to all of that in the show notes. Sabrina, I look forward to doing another episode or two with you where we'll talk about pregnancy, nutrition, as well the so important conversation about what to be feeding you yourself postpartum and to keep lactation optimal. So stay tuned, everyone, for those episodes. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Please, if you would be so kind, I would be grateful if you could share, subscribe, rate, and review the show. Please follow the show over on Instagram at Fertile@40podcast and share what you thought about this week's episode. Don't forget to tag us. For more info on today's show, please head on over to the podcast website at meganpearson.ca/podcast. Until next time.